This is Audible.
Audible Inc. presents Parallel Worlds, a journey through creation, higher dimensions, and the future of the cosmos, by Michio Kaku, read by Mark Vitor.
Preface. Cosmology is the study of the universe as a whole, including its birth and perhaps its ultimate fate. Not surprisingly, it has undergone many transformations in its slow, painful evolution, an evolution often overshadowed by religious dogma and superstition. The first revolution in cosmology was ushered in by the introduction of the telescope in the 1600s. With the aid of the telescope, Galileo Galilei, building on the work of the great astronomers Nicolaus Copernicus and Johannes Kepler, was able to open up the splendor of the heavens for the first time to serious scientific investigation. The advancement of this first stage of cosmology culminated in the work of Isaac Newton, who finally laid down the fundamental laws governing the motion of the celestial bodies. Instead of magic and mysticism, the laws of heavenly bodies were now seen to be subject to forces that were computable and reproducible. A second revolution in cosmology was initiated by the introduction of the great telescopes of the 20th century, such as the one at Mount Wilson with its huge 100-inch reflecting mirror. In the 1920s, astronomer Edwin Hubble used this giant telescope to overturn centuries of dogma, which stated that the universe was static and eternal, by demonstrating that the galaxies in the heavens are moving away from the Earth at tremendous velocities, that is, the universe is expanding. This confirmed the results of Einstein's theory of general relativity, in which the architecture of space-time, instead of being flat and linear, is dynamic and curved. This gave the first plausible explanation of the origin of the universe, that the universe began with a cataclysmic explosion called the Big Bang, which sent the stars and galaxies hurtling outward in space. With the pioneering work of George Gamow and his colleagues on the Big Bang theory, and Fred Hoyle on the origin of the elements, a scaffolding was emerging, giving the broad outlines of the evolution of the universe. A third revolution is now underway. It is only about 5 years old. It has been ushered in by a battery of new high-tech instruments, such as space satellites, lasers, gravity wave detectors, X-ray telescopes, and high-speed supercomputers. We now have the most authoritative data yet on the nature of the universe, including its age, its composition, and perhaps even its future and eventual death. Astronomers now realize that the universe is expanding in a runaway mode, accelerating without limit, becoming colder and colder with time. If this continues, we face the prospect of the Big Freeze, when the universe is plunged into darkness and cold, and all intelligent life dies out. This audiobook is about this third great revolution. It differs from my earlier books on physics, Beyond Einstein, and Hyperspace, which helped to introduce to the public the new concepts of higher dimensions and superstring theory. In Parallel Worlds, instead of focusing on space-time, I concentrate on the revolutionary developments in cosmology unfolding within the last several years, based on new evidence from the world's laboratories and the outermost reaches of space, and new breakthroughs in theoretical physics. It is my intention that it can be heard and grasped without any previous introduction to physics or cosmology. In part one of the audiobook, I focus on the study of the universe, summarizing the advances made in the early stages of cosmology, culminating in the theory called inflation, which gives us the most advanced formulation to date of the Big Bang theory. In part two, I focus specifically on the emerging theory of the multiverse, a world made up of multiple universes, of which ours is but one, and discuss the possibility of wormholes, space and time warps, and how higher dimensions might connect them. Superstring theory and M-theory have given us the first major step beyond Einstein's original theory. They give further evidence that our universe may be but one of many. Finally, in Part 3, I discuss the Big Freeze and what scientists now see as the end of our universe. I also give a serious, though speculative, discussion of how an advanced civilization in the distant future might use the laws of physics to leave our universe trillions of years from now and enter another, more hospitable universe to begin the process of rebirth, or to go back in time when the universe was warmer. With the flood of new data we are receiving today, with new tools such as space satellites which can scan the heavens, with new gravity wave detectors, and with new city-size atom smashers nearing completion, physicists feel that we are entering what may be the golden age of cosmology. It is, in short, a great time to be a physicist and a voyager on this quest to understand our origins and the fate of the universe. Part 1. The Universe. Chapter 1. Baby Pictures of the Universe. The poet only asks to get his head into the heavens. It is the logician who seeks to get the heavens into his head, and it is his head that splits. G.K. Chesterton. When I was a child, I had a personal conflict over my beliefs. My parents were raised in the Buddhist tradition, but I attended Sunday school every week, where I loved hearing the biblical stories about whales, arks, pillars of salt, ribs, and apples. I was fascinated by these Old Testament parables, which were my favorite part of Sunday school. It seemed to me that the parables about great floods, burning bushes, and parting waters were so much more exciting than Buddhist chanting and meditation. In fact, these ancient tales of heroism and tragedy vividly illustrated deep moral and ethical lessons which have stayed with me all my life. One day in Sunday school, we studied Genesis. To read about God thundering from the heavens, "Let there be light," sounded so much more dramatic than silently meditating about nirvana. Out of naive curiosity, I asked my Sunday school teacher, "Did God have a mother?" She usually had a snappy answer as well as a deep moral lesson to offer. This time, however, she was taken aback. "No," she replied hesitantly, "God probably did not have a mother." "But then where did God come from?" I asked. She mumbled that she would have to consult with the minister about that question. I didn't realize that I had accidentally stumbled on one of the great questions of theology. I was puzzled, because in Buddhism there is no God at all, but a timeless universe with no beginning or end. Later, when I began to study the great mythologies of the world, I learned that there were two types of cosmologies in religion— the first based on a single moment when God created the universe, the second based on the idea that the universe always was and always will be. They couldn't both be right, I thought. Later, I began to find that these common themes cut across many other cultures. In Chinese mythology, for example, in the beginning, there was the cosmic egg. The infant god Pan Ku resided for almost an eternity inside the egg, which floated on a formless sea of chaos. When it finally hatched, Pan Ku grew enormously, over 10 feet per day, so the top half of the eggshell became the sky and the bottom half the earth. After 18,000 years, he died to give birth to our world. His blood became the rivers, his eyes the sun and moon, and his voice the thunder. In many ways, the Pan Ku myth mirrors a theme found in many other religions and ancient mythologies, that the universe sprang into existence, creatio ex nihilo, created from nothing. In Greek mythology, the universe started off in a state of chaos. In fact, the word chaos comes from the Greek word meaning abyss. This featureless void is often described as an ocean, as in Babylonian and Japanese mythology. This theme is found in ancient Egyptian mythology, where the sun god Ra emerged from a floating egg. In Polynesian mythology, the cosmic egg is replaced by a coconut shell. The Mayans believed in a variation of this story, in which the universe is born but eventually dies after 5,000 years, only to be resurrected again and again to repeat the unending cycle of birth and destruction. These creatio ex nihilo myths stand in marked contrast to the cosmology according to Buddhism and certain forms of Hinduism. In these mythologies, the universe is timeless, with no beginning or end. There are many levels of existence, but the highest is nirvana, which is eternal and can be attained only by the purest meditation. In the Hindu Mahapurana, it is written, "If God created the world, where was he before creation? Know that the world is uncreated, as time itself is, without beginning and end." These mythologies stand in marked contradiction to each other, with no apparent resolution between them. They are mutually exclusive. Either the universe had a beginning, or it didn't. There is apparently no middle ground. Today, however, a resolution seems to be emerging from an entirely new direction, the world of science, as the result of a new generation of powerful scientific instruments soaring through outer space. Ancient mythology relied upon the wisdom of storytellers to expound on the origins of our world. Today, scientists are unleashing a battery of space satellites, lasers, gravity wave detectors, interferometers, high-speed supercomputers, and the Internet, in the process revolutionizing our understanding of the universe and giving us the most compelling description yet of its creation. What is gradually emerging from the data is a grand synthesis of these two opposing mythologies. Perhaps, scientists speculate, Genesis occurs repeatedly in a timeless ocean of nirvana. In this new picture, our universe may be compared to a bubble floating in a much larger ocean, with new bubbles forming all the time. According to this theory, universes, like bubbles forming in boiling water, are in continual creation, floating in a much larger arena, the nirvana of 11-dimensional hyperspace. A growing number of physicists suggest that our universe did indeed spring forth from a fiery cataclysm, the Big Bang, but that it also coexists in an eternal ocean of other universes. If we are right, Big Bangs are taking place even as you hear this sentence. Physicists and astronomers around the world are now speculating about what these parallel worlds may look like, what laws they may obey, how they are born, and how they may eventually die. Perhaps these parallel worlds are barren, without the basic ingredients of life. Or perhaps they look just like our universe, separated by a single quantum event that made these universes diverge from ours. And a few physicists are speculating that perhaps one day, if life becomes untenable in our present universe as it ages and grows cold, we may be forced to leave it and escape to another universe. The engine driving these new theories is the massive flood of data that is pouring in from our space satellites as they photograph remnants of creation itself. Remarkably, scientists are now zeroing in on what happened a mere 380,000 years after the Big Bang, when the afterglow of creation first filled the universe. Perhaps the most compelling picture of this radiation from creation is coming from a new instrument called the WMAP satellite. The WMAP satellite. Incredible. A milestone, were among the words uttered in February 2003 by normally reserved astrophysicists as they described the precious data harvested from their latest satellite. The WMAP, Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe, named after pioneering cosmologist David Wilkinson and launched in 2001, has given scientists, with unprecedented precision, a detailed picture of the early universe when it was a mere 380,000 years old. The colossal energy left over from the original fireball that gave birth to stars and galaxies has been circulating around our universe for billions of years. Today, it has finally been captured on film in exquisite detail by the WMAP satellite, yielding a map never seen before, a photo of the sky showing with breathtaking detail the microwave radiation created by the Big Bang itself, what has been called the Echo of Creation by Time magazine. Never again will astronomers look at the sky in the same way again. The findings of the WMAP satellite represent a rite of passage for cosmology from speculation to precision science, declared John Bacall of the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton. For the first time, this deluge of data from this early period in the history of the universe has allowed cosmologists to answer precisely the most ancient of all questions, questions that have puzzled and intrigued humanity since we first gazed at the blazing celestial beauty of the night sky. How old is the universe? What is it made of? What is the fate of the universe? In 1992, a previous satellite, the COBE, Cosmic Background Explorer satellite, gave us the first blurry pictures of this background radiation filling the sky. Although this result was revolutionary, it was also disappointing because it gave such an out-of-focus picture of the early universe. This did not prevent the press from excitedly dubbing this photograph the face of God. But a more accurate description of the blurry pictures from COBE would be that they represented a baby picture of the infant universe. If the universe today is an 80-year-old man, the COBE and later the WMAP pictures showed him as a newborn, less than a day old. The reason the WMAP satellite can give us unprecedented pictures of the infant universe is that the night sky is like a time machine. Because light travels at a finite speed, the stars we see at night are seen as they once were, not as they are today. It takes a little over a second for light from the moon to reach Earth, so when we gaze at the moon, we actually see it as it was a second earlier. It takes about 8 minutes for light to travel from the sun to Earth. Likewise, many of the familiar stars we see in the heavens are so distant that it takes from 10 to 100 years for their light to reach our eyes. In other words, they lie 10 to 100 light years from Earth. A light year is roughly 6 trillion miles, or the distance light travels in a year. Light from the distant galaxies may be hundreds of millions to billions of light-years away. As a result, they represent fossil light, some emitted even before the rise of the dinosaurs. Some of the farthest objects we can see with our telescopes are called quasars, huge galactic engines generating unbelievable amounts of power near the edge of the visible universe, which can lie up to 12 to 13 billion light-years from Earth. And now, the WMAP satellite has detected radiation emitted even before that, from the original fireball that created the universe. To describe the universe, cosmologists sometimes use the example of looking down from the top of the Empire State Building, which soars more than 100 floors above Manhattan. As you look down from the top, you can barely see the street level. If the base of the Empire State Building represents the Big Bang, then, looking down from the top, the distant galaxies would be located on the 10th floor. The distant quasars seen by Earth telescopes would be on the 7th floor. The cosmic background, measured by the WMAP satellite, would be just a half an inch above the street. And now, the WMAP satellite has given us the precise measurement of the age of the universe to an astonishing 1% accuracy, 13.7 billion years. The WMAP mission is the culmination of over a decade of hard work by astrophysicists. The concept of the WMAP satellite was first proposed to NASA in 1995 and was approved 2 years later. On June 30, 2001, NASA sent the WMAP satellite aboard a Delta II rocket into a solar orbit perched between Earth and the Sun. The destination was carefully chosen to be the Lagrange Point 2, or L2, a special point of relative stability near Earth. From this vantage point, the satellite always points away from the Sun, Earth, and Moon, and hence has a totally unobstructed view of the universe. It completely scans the entire sky every 6 months. Its instrumentation is state-of-the-art. With its powerful sensors, it can detect the faint microwave radiation left over from the Big Bang that bathes the universe, but is largely absorbed by our atmosphere. The aluminum composite satellite measures 3.8 meters by 5 meters, about 11.4 feet by 15 feet, and weighs 840 kilograms, 1,850 pounds. It has two back-to-back telescopes that focus the microwave radiation from the surrounding sky, and eventually it radios the data back to Earth. It is powered by just 419 watts of electricity, the power of 5 ordinary light bulbs. Sitting 1 million miles from Earth, the WMAP satellite is well above Earth's atmospheric disturbances, which can mask the faint microwave background, and it is able to get continuous readings of the entire sky. The satellite completed its first observation of the full sky in April 2002. 6 months later, the second full sky observation was made. Today, the WMAP satellite has given us the most comprehensive, detailed map of this radiation ever produced. The background microwave radiation the WMAP detected was first predicted by George Gamow and his group in 1948, who also noted that this radiation has a temperature associated with it. The WMAP measured this temperature to be just above absolute zero, or between 2.7249 to 2.7251 degrees Kelvin. To the unaided eye, the WMAP map of the sky looks rather uninteresting. It is just a collection of random dots. However, this collection of dots has driven some astronomers almost to tears, for they represent fluctuations or irregularities in the original, fiery cataclysm of the Big Bang shortly after the universe was created. These tiny fluctuations are like seeds that have since expanded enormously as the universe itself exploded outward. Today, these tiny seeds have blossomed into the galactic clusters and galaxies we see lighting up the heavens. In other words, our own Milky Way galaxy and all the galactic clusters we see around us were once one of these tiny fluctuations. By measuring the distribution of these fluctuations, we see the origin of the galactic clusters, like dots painted on the cosmic tapestry that hangs over the night sky. Today, the volume of astronomical data is outpacing scientists' theories. In fact, I would argue that we are entering a golden age of cosmology. As impressive as the WMAP satellite is, it will likely be dwarfed by the Planck satellite, which the Europeans are launching in 2007. The Planck will give astronomers even more detailed pictures of this microwave background radiation. Cosmology today is finally coming of age, emerging from the shadows of science after languishing for years in a morass of speculation and wild conjecture. Historically, cosmologists have suffered from a slightly unsavory reputation. The passion with which they proposed grandiose theories of the universe was matched only by the stunning poverty of their data. As Nobel laureate Lev Landau used to quip, "Cosmologists are often in error, but never in doubt." The sciences have an old adage, "There's speculation, then there's more speculation, and then there's cosmology." As a physics major at Harvard in the late 1960s, I briefly toyed with the possibility of studying cosmology. Since childhood, I've always had a fascination with the origin of the universe. However, a quick glance at the field showed that it was embarrassingly primitive. It was not an experimental science at all, where one can test hypotheses with precise instruments, but rather a collection of loose, highly speculative theories. Cosmologists engaged in heated debates about whether the universe was born in a cosmic explosion or whether it has always existed in a steady state. But with so little data, the theories quickly outpaced the data. In fact, the less the data, the fiercer the debate. Throughout the history of cosmology, this paucity of reliable data also led to bitter, long-standing feuds between astronomers, which often raged for decades. For example, just before astronomer Alan Sandage of the Mount Wilson Observatory was supposed to give a talk about the age of the universe, the previous speaker announced sarcastically, "What you will hear next is all wrong." And Sandage, hearing of how a rival group had generated a great deal of publicity, would roar, "That's a bunch of hooey. It's war. It's war." The Age of the Universe. Astronomers have been especially keen to know the age of the universe. For centuries, scholars, priests, and theologians have tried to estimate the age of the universe using the only method at their disposal, the genealogy of humanity since Adam and Eve. In the last century, geologists have used the residual radiation stored in rocks to give the best estimate of the age of Earth. In comparison, the WMAP satellite today has measured the echo of the Big Bang itself to give us the most authoritative age of the universe. The WMAP data reveals that the universe was born in a fiery explosion that took place 13.7 billion years ago. Over the years, one of the most embarrassing facts plaguing cosmology has been that the age of the universe was often computed to be younger than the age of the planets and stars due to faulty data. Previous estimates of the age of the universe were as low as 1 to 2 billion years, which contradicted the age of Earth, 4.5 billion years, and the oldest stars, 12 billion years. These contradictions have now been eliminated. The WMAP has added a new, bizarre twist to the debate over what the universe is made of, a question that the Greeks asked over 2,000 years ago. For the past century, scientists believed that they knew the answer to this question. After thousands of painstaking experiments, scientists had concluded that the universe was basically made of about 100 different types of atoms, arranged in an orderly, periodic chart, beginning with elemental hydrogen. This forms the basis of modern chemistry, and is in fact taught in every high school science class. The WMAP has now demolished that belief. Confirming previous experiments, the WMAP satellite showed that the visible matter we see around us, including the mountains, planets, stars, and galaxies, makes up a paltry 4% of the total matter and energy content of the universe. Of that 4%, most of it is in the form of hydrogen and helium, and probably only 0.03% takes the form of the heavy elements. Most of the universe is actually made of mysterious, invisible material of totally unknown origin. The familiar elements that make up our world constitute only 0.03% of the universe. In some sense, science is being thrown back centuries into the past, before the rise of the atomic hypothesis, as physicists grapple with the fact that the universe is dominated by entirely new, unknown forms of matter and energy. According to the WMAP, 23% of the universe is made of a strange, undetermined substance called dark matter, which has weight, surrounds the galaxies in a gigantic halo, but is totally invisible. Dark matter is so pervasive and abundant that in our own Milky Way galaxy, it outweighs all the stars by a factor of 10. Although invisible, this strange dark matter can be observed indirectly by scientists because it bends starlight, just like glass, and hence can be located by the amount of optical distortion it creates. Referring to the strange results obtained from the WMAP satellite, Princeton astronomer John Bacall said, "We live in an implausible, crazy universe, but one whose defining characteristics we now know." But perhaps the greatest surprise from the WMAP data, data that sent the scientific community reeling, was that 73% of the universe, by far the largest amount, is made of a totally unknown form of energy called dark energy, or the invisible energy hidden in the vacuum of space. Introduced by Einstein himself in 1917, and then later discarded, he called it his greatest blunder. Dark energy, or the energy of nothing, or empty space, is now re-emerging as the driving force in the entire universe. This dark energy is now believed to create a new anti-gravity field which is driving the galaxies apart. The ultimate fate of the universe itself will be determined by dark energy. No one at the present time has any understanding of where this energy of nothing comes from. Frankly, we just don't understand it. We know what its effects are, but we're completely clueless. Everybody's clueless about it, admits Craig Hogan, an astronomer at the University of Washington at Seattle. If we take the latest theory of subatomic particles and try to compute the value of this dark energy, we find a number that is off by 10 to the 120th power. That's the number 1 followed by 120 zeros. This discrepancy between theory and experiment is far and away the largest gap ever found in the history of science. It is one of our greatest embarrassments. Our best theory cannot calculate the value of the largest source of energy in the entire universe. Surely there is a shelf full of Nobel Prizes waiting for the enterprising individuals who can unravel the mystery of dark matter and dark energy. Inflation. Astronomers are still trying to wade through this avalanche of data from the WMAP. As it sweeps away older conceptions of the universe, a new cosmological picture is emerging. We have laid the cornerstone of a unified, coherent theory of the cosmos, declares Charles L. Bennett, who led an international team that helped to build and analyze the WMAP satellite. So far, the leading theory is the inflationary universe theory, a major refinement of the Big Bang theory, first proposed by physicist Alan Guth of MIT. In the inflationary scenario, in the first trillionth of a second, a mysterious anti-gravity force caused the universe to expand much faster than originally thought. The inflationary period was unimaginably explosive, with the universe expanding much faster than the speed of light. This does not violate Einstein's dictum that nothing can travel faster than light, because it is empty space that is expanding. For material objects, the light barrier cannot be broken. Within a fraction of a second, the universe expanded by an unimaginable factor of 10 to the 50th power. To visualize the power of this inflationary period, imagine a balloon that is being rapidly inflated with the galaxies painted on the surface. The universe that we see, populated by the stars and galaxies, all lies on the surface of this balloon, rather than in the interior. Now draw a microscopic circle on the balloon. This tiny circle represents the visible universe, everything we can see with our telescopes. By comparison, if the entire visible universe were as small as a subatomic particle, then the actual universe would be much larger than the visible universe that we see around us. In other words, the inflationary expansion was so intense that there are whole regions of the universe beyond our visible universe that will forever be beyond our reach. The inflation was so enormous, in fact, that the balloon seems flat in our vicinity, a fact that has been experimentally verified by the WMAP satellite. In the same way that the Earth appears flat to us because we are so small compared to the radius of Earth, the universe appears flat only because it is curved on a much larger scale. By assuming that the early universe underwent this process of inflation, one can almost effortlessly explain many of the puzzles concerning the universe, such as why it appears to be flat and uniform. Commenting on the inflation theory, physicist Joel Primack has said, "No theory as beautiful as this has ever been wrong before." the multiverse. The inflationary universe, though it is consistent with the data from the WMAP satellite, still does not answer the question, what caused inflation? What set off this anti-gravity force that inflated the universe? There are over 50 proposals explaining what turned on inflation and what eventually terminated it, creating the universe we see around us. But there is no universal consensus. Most physicists rally around the core idea of a rapid inflationary period, but there is no definitive proposal to answer what the engine behind inflation is. Because no one knows precisely how inflation started, there is always the possibility that the same mechanism can take place again, that inflationary explosions can happen repeatedly. This is the idea proposed by Russian physicist Andrei Linde of Stanford University, that whatever mechanism caused part of the universe to suddenly inflate is still at work, perhaps randomly causing other distant regions of the universe to inflate as well. According to this theory, a tiny patch of a universe may suddenly inflate and bud, sprouting a daughter universe or baby universe, which may in turn bud another baby universe, with this budding process continuing forever. Imagine blowing soap bubbles into the air. If we blow hard enough, we see that some of the soap bubbles split in half and generate new soap bubbles. In the same way, universes may be continually giving birth to new universes. In this scenario, big bangs have been happening continually. If true, we may live in a sea of such universes, like a bubble floating in an ocean of other bubbles. In fact, a better word than universe would be multiverse or megaverse. Linde calls this theory eternal self-reproducing inflation, or chaotic inflation, because he envisions a never-ending process of continual inflation of parallel universes. Inflation pretty much forces the idea of multiple universes upon us, declares Alan Guth, who first proposed the inflation theory. This theory also means that our universe may, at some time, bud a baby universe of its own. Perhaps our own universe may have gotten its start by budding off from a more ancient, earlier universe. As the Astronomer Royal of Great Britain, Sir Martin Rees, has said, what's conventionally called the universe could be just one member of an ensemble. Countless other ways may exist in which the laws are different. The universe in which we've emerged belongs to the unusual subset that permits complexity and consciousness to develop. All this research activity on the subject of the multiverse has given rise to speculation about what these other universes may look like, whether they harbor life, and even whether it's possible to eventually make contact with them. Calculations have been made by scientists at Caltech, MIT, Princeton, and other centers of learning to determine whether entering a parallel universe is consistent with the laws of physics. M theory and the 11th dimension. The very idea of parallel universes was once viewed with suspicion by scientists as being the province of mystics, charlatans, and cranks. Any scientist daring to work on parallel universes was subject to ridicule and was jeopardizing his or her career, since even today there is no experimental evidence proving their existence. But recently, the tide has turned dramatically, with the finest minds on the planet working furiously on the subject. The reason for this sudden change is the arrival of a new theory, string theory, and its latest version, M theory, which promised not only to unravel the nature of the multiverse, but also to allow us to read the mind of God, as Einstein once eloquently put it. If proved correct, it would represent the crowning achievement of the last 2,000 years of research in physics, ever since the Greeks first began the search for a single coherent and comprehensive theory of the universe. The number of papers published in string theory and M theory is staggering, amounting to tens of thousands. Hundreds of international conferences have been held on the subject, every single major university in the world either has a group working on string theory or is desperately trying to learn it. Although the theory is not testable with our feeble present-day instruments, it has sparked enormous interest among physicists, mathematicians, and even experimentalists who hope to test the periphery of the theory in the future with powerful gravity wave detectors in outer space and huge atom smashers. Ultimately, this theory may answer the question that has dogged cosmologists ever since the Big Bang theory was first proposed. What happened before the Big Bang? This requires us to bring to bear the full force of our physical knowledge of every physical discovery accumulated over the centuries. In other words, we need a theory of everything, a theory of every physical force that drives the universe. Einstein spent the last 30 years of his life chasing after this theory, but he ultimately failed. At present, the leading and only theory that can explain the diversity of forces we see guiding the universe is string theory, or in its latest incarnation, M theory. M stands for membrane, but can also mean mystery, magic, even mother. Although string theory and M theory are essentially identical, M theory is a more mysterious and more sophisticated framework which unifies various string theories. Ever since the Greeks, philosophers have speculated that the ultimate building blocks of matter might be made of tiny particles called atoms. Today, with our powerful atom smashers and particle accelerators, we can break apart the atom itself into electrons and nuclei, which in turn can be broken into even smaller subatomic particles. But instead of finding an elegant and simple framework, it was distressing to find that there were hundreds of subatomic particles streaming from our accelerators, with strange names like neutrinos, quarks, mesons, leptons, hadrons, gluons, W bosons, and so forth. It is hard to believe that nature, at its most fundamental level, could create a confusing jungle of bizarre subatomic particles. String theory and M theory are based on the simple and elegant idea that the bewildering variety of subatomic particles making up the universe are similar to the notes that one can play on a violin string or on a membrane such as a drum head. These are no ordinary strings and membranes. They exist in 10 and 11 dimensional hyperspace. Traditionally, physicists viewed electrons as being point particles, which were infinitesimally small. This meant physicists had to introduce a different point particle for each of the hundreds of subatomic particles they found, which was very confusing. But according to string theory, if we had a super microscope that could peer into the heart of an electron, we would see that it was not a point particle at all, but a tiny vibrating string. It only appeared to be a point particle because our instruments were too crude. This tiny string, in turn, vibrates at different frequencies and resonances. If we were to pluck this vibrating string, it would change mode and become another subatomic particle, such as a quark. Pluck it again, and it turns into a neutrino. In this way, we can explain the blizzard of subatomic particles as nothing but different musical notes of the string. We can now replace the hundreds of subatomic particles seen in the laboratory with a single object, the string. In this new vocabulary, the laws of physics, carefully constructed after thousands of years of experimentation, are nothing but the laws of harmony one can write down for strings and membranes. The laws of chemistry are the melodies that one can play on these strings. The universe is a symphony of strings, and the mind of God, which Einstein wrote eloquently about, is cosmic music resonating throughout hyperspace. Which raises another question. If the universe is a symphony of strings, then is there a composer? I address this question in Chapter 12. Musical analogy. Musical notation. String counterpart, mathematics. Musical analogy, violin strings. String counterpart, superstrings. Musical analogy, notes. String counterpart, subatomic particles. Musical analogy, laws of harmony. String counterpart,